then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, a vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, in the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more roar for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud walled cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a man big chest was throbbing for the blessed warming light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely croon, and a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest Homeland, comrades. It's October the 1st, 2015. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Right, I think I'll start off with an email this week. This is from a lady named Lacey, whom we had on the show a couple of weeks ago. Dear Mr. Covington, my husband and I are planning our scouting trip in April. I think that would be the best time. It's right after our busy time of year, i.e. tax time, and we can leave and not have to worry about things for a few days. Regarding location, I was thinking of starting at Wenatchee and exploring all the surrounding areas. I was also looking at real estate in Spokane, which appears to be much less expensive. We've decided to rent for the first year or two so we can make an informed decision on where our forever home will be. So, real estate prices aren't a real deal-breaker at this point on where we go. I also like King County, but wow, the average house price is $500,000. Yeah, I know, I mentioned that a couple of weeks ago. Seattle and San Francisco between them are becoming kind of like mini New York cities in a lot of respects, because basically they've got jobs. Portland and the Portland suburbs might actually be a more livable choice for some of you folks. Again, for those of you who need a big city and the employment that a big city provides. Anyway, back to Lacey's email. So many great places. We are so excited. I have a question. I've listened to almost all of the Radio Free Northwest podcasts, but I haven't heard this question asked yet. Maybe you can answer it on Thursday. Is the Northwest Front known to the locals in the area? Are they aware of its presence, or is it too small to be noticed? And if it's known, how is it perceived? Is it tolerated? Okay, talk to you later. Right, let's take the locations you mentioned first, Lacey. The Spokane area is a place where we're short on people, so I'm interested in promoting it as a migration area. Spokane is like Portland. If anybody ever decided he actually wanted to get active in Spokane, we could build a community there and on through northern Idaho pretty quick. We got a lot of people left over from the Aryan Nations days up there in northern Idaho, but as usual, nobody's willing or able to step forward. Everybody is sitting around waiting for Godot. I'm sorry if I sound cranky, but what can I tell you? It is what it is. I'll get into that aspect of Lacey's email a bit later. One thing, if you choose Spokane, the Spokane County Sheriff is a really bad neoconservative Christian Zionist type, one of those buzz-cut kill-a-Nazi-for-Christ tropes that I described in various places in my novels. He actually invited the Southern Poverty Law Center into his department to indoctrinate his deputies with their neo-Marxist poison, which you might think is odd for a red, white, and blue conservative type, but American conservatives are actually not very bright and not very knowledgeable. They think communism is just the old Soviet Union with the hammer and sickle, or maybe the Viet Cong if they're old enough to remember Nam. They don't understand what actual Marxism is, and they don't recognize it when they see it. The Southern Poverty Law Center being a case in point. That jughead Spokane sheriff probably still doesn't understand that he invited actual Reds into his house to wash his people's brains squeaky clean. So just be aware, we do get these John Wayne wannabes up here. Now, I've never been to Wenatchee. I do know that those who live there swear by it. It looks from the outside, from what I can tell, to be a nice middle-sized town. the type of town where our people have always thrived in this country. The population officially is a little over 30,000, not counting illegals, of which there are a lot. Now, one thing you do need to understand is that there are several areas in eastern Washington, specifically Wenatchee and Yakima, where there is extensive commercial agriculture in the form of apples, pears, various orchard-grown fruits, and truck farms, as well as alfalfa, sorghum, and livestock, kind of staples. And where there is agriculture, there's a demand for agricultural labor, and that means a lot of Mexicans, although, from what I understand, virtually no niggers. That's actually a trade-off more and more white people are having to make all across the country. What do you want to hear constantly in your ear? The gabble of Spanish, or do you want to hear booga booga booga? Now, I say to you again, the Northwest is still overwhelmingly majority white, all told. But there are black and brown spots for economic and other reasons, so don't say you weren't warned. Also, one thing I suppose I should mention about Wenatchee, just by way of background, is that 20 years ago they had one of these hysterical, satanic, ritual child abuse panics. A bad one. Somehow, some Mexican police lieutenant named Perez managed to gin up the whole thing and make himself into some kind of child abuse Svengali, and he was able to manipulate Child Protective Services, which he used to pursue his personal vendetta against some Holy Roller church where he had a feud going with a preacher. Or maybe the Child Protective Services droids manipulated the Mexican cop. Who knows how these dynamics actually play out in real life. By the way, I looked this case up on the net and I found a photo of the Beaner, and at first he looked white because he had blonde hair, but then I found an older photo of him which clearly showed black roots on his head, and so he actually dyed his hair to make himself look more Caucasian. Anyway, based on the word of this one jackass and one deranged teenage girl who just happened to be Perez's foster daughter, in 1995 the police arrested 43 people. Most of them connected in some way to that church and that preacher that Lieutenant Perez had the feud going with, on a total of 29,723 counts of sex abuse. To make a long story short, eventually it was proven that none of it ever happened, and the few confessions were beaten and tortured and otherwise coerced, although one poor bastard ended up spending almost 5 years in jail because he couldn't afford a lawyer and he had to rely on a public defender, which isn't the same thing. Actually, if you're into this kind of thing, this is an interesting case to read up on. Now, the reason I mention this here, Lacey, is that, like everywhere else in Obama's America, here in the Northwest, so-called law enforcement can be very problematic. We've got just as many lazy, crazy, and corrupt cops as anywhere else, and don't even get me started on Tacoma. Now, if I might offer a few suggestions, not just to Lacey, but to all prospective migrants, well, you know, maybe I better start using the term settlers instead of migrants, since that's what they're calling the Muslim invaders of Europe. There are a number of places up and down Interstate 5 which are small enough to be livable and won't have a lot of the problems that you'll find in the major cities, like Puget and Portland and Spokane. Now, there's the Twin Cities of Centralia and Chehalis, Longview, Salem, Oregon, Ashland, and Roseburg, Oregon. In Idaho, you got Moscow, I think they pronounce it Moscow, Post Falls, Pocatello, and Boise. There's the Tri-Cities area of eastern Washington, i.e. Kennewick, Pasco, and Richland. That's where they found Kennewick Man. And, of course, there's the Coeur d'Alene, Sandpoint area of Idaho. In Montana, you've got Kalispell, Helena, and Missoula. Again, I hate to sound like I'm trying to run people off from our own growing little community here in Pugetopolis, but this is an important decision. Make sure you take a good long look before you leap. Now, as to the second part of Lacey's email, whether the locals are aware of our presence. Well, yeah, kind of. There has been enough passing coverage down through the years, so I think most people in the Northwest have a vague idea that there's some sort of independence movement here. They probably mix it up with Aryan Nations in their mind. The authorities are certainly aware of us, owing to a number of incidents and slips they've made, which I won't get into, although so far it hasn't reached the point of them raiding our homes yet. About once a year, the FBI cruises through the Northwest visiting people and trying to turn them as snitches, looking for the NVA, as they claim. I suspect that we're fairly low on their priority list at the moment, since we're not running around showing our butts in public, and there are, after all, for real criminals and dangerous individuals out there for them to deal with. Now, there isn't as much local activism here in the Northwest among local people as I would like to see, but there are legitimate reasons for that. Other than a small handful of us, we're all actually employed, and many of us have families, and practically speaking, in this day and age, that's a full-time career in itself. Anybody remember the 40-hour week? There's not many of those left. The local lefties who read Politico.com and our local ultra-left websites are aware of us, certainly, because we get all kinds of heckling and BS on the internet from them. Local activism will come when we get established communities and a professionalized party. Yeah, that professionalized party that I keep ranting and raving about. Right now, we are trying to set up core groups across the homeland, which will form the skeleton of that party. This is where the new settlers are vitally important. Your first duty right now is homecoming. Concentrate on that. The rest will eventually come. Let's just hope it comes soon enough. Okay, I'm being overrun here with all kinds of great stuff that our people are finding on YouTube and elsewhere on the internet from Maura Kiyu and a lot of others, most of whom, for obvious reasons, don't use their real names. And I'm extremely impressed with the quality and professionalism of a lot of this propaganda. There seems to be an explosion of it just in the past year. This week, I'm going to be showcasing a lot of these short pieces. And again, half this stuff, I don't know who does it, but some of it's pretty good. We'll start off with a more cue.
Agreeing with liberals for the wrong reasons, episode 13. This one's going to be short and sweet. As a right-winger, you would want magazines to stop using Photoshop because you don't want to see fake women. You want to see a real, authentic female body. We don't want to be giving people unrealistic expectations that they'll never meet and will only intensify their self-hatred. Expectations like what you'll look like when you start hormones and get ready to cut your dick off. So yeah, we've really got to stop this abuse of Photoshop by these magazines. I mean, something, something, something gender essentialism, blah, blah, blah.
Westbound and down, 18 wheels are rolling. Are we gonna do what they say can be done? We've got a long way to go, and a short time to get there. I'm westbound just like a bandit run. If you put hard on the pedal, some hell my mind it breaks. Let it all hang out, cause we gotta run the baby.
Greetings, comrades. This is the trucker coming at you from the state of Jefferson. Yep. I just loaded yesterday, the 14th of September, down there in the LA area. Glad to be out of there. Currently climbing through the Siskiyous, and it's, 4:30-ish in the morning, and it's 44 degrees, so the fall is coming, and old man winter is probably shortly behind that. This feels great after having to deal with the 70s and 80s and weather down there in Southern California. Yeah, I know. All you people back there in the South, and when I was back there a week or so ago there in Pennsylvania, it was just as warm and muggy there as it was down there in Southern California. But I'm gotten spoiled since I've been up in the homeland since 1980. Yeah, it gets warm up here, but we don't have near the humidity and the length of hot weather that y'all do down there in the South and back on the East Coast and the muggy Midwest and all that. Yeah, I know I should be used to the mugginess, seeing as how I'm originally from Michigan, but we had a nice river to go and dive in, swim around. I'm not talking a little creek, neither. I'm talking a navigation waterway. We had lake freighters go past, so those of you that know the area can probably figure out where I'm from. So we used to go and bop across the river to Canada all the time to go and pick up our fireworks. But that's no more because the border checkpoints and all this kind of crap. Yeah, we were supposed to go through it way back when, but anyway. Yeah, just checking in, giving a quick update on what I've been up to, and you know, you guys should be doing your scouting trips and making your migration before the snow flies. Now, if you're brave enough to do it in the wintertime, yeah, if you watch your weather fronts and all that, you might be able to luck out and be able to make it all the way across country without having to hit any major delays or anything like that in the wintertime, but it's not really recommended. I'm a professional. I do this for a living. But, yeah, sorry, little trucker humor there. I was expecting and was prepared for stuff to get ugly around September 11th. And fortunately, it didn't happen here. Gee, it just broke my heart half in two to hear about that crane falling on that big old mosque over there in Mecca. Gee, that's too bad. I'm sorry. Not. Anyway, watching all the crap going on over there in Europe with the refugees and old Bumbler wanting to go and let more of his Muslim refugees into the United States. Come on, guys. Get to the homeland so we can get this going and put a stop to all this Muslim and nigger crap. Just be able to have a country of our own. You guys are just going to wait and for us to get it going. Well, we're trying to get it going, but assistance would be nice. But you probably end up waiting till it's way too late and you're going to be stuck like that family from Freedom Sons. They're in the Chicago area, ended up running across the border with nothing but the clothes on their backs. But if you make your exodus now and your pilgrimage out here, you can bring all kinds of assets with you. So what's stopping you? Come on, get it in gear, guys. The roads are open. We don't have any border checkpoints set up around the homeland, at least not yet. So, yeah, please, let's get it in gear, guys. All right, this is a trucker signing off from the state of Jefferson. Me in Oregon here in a couple of minutes and climb the rest of the way over the Siskiyous and be going through Ashland and all that. I've already gone through the Mountain Gate area, which was also in the books. So, anyway, all right, comrades, well, this is the trucker signing off, hoping to see you in the homeland soon. Greetings, comrades. This is the trucker coming at you from southern Oregon. Just went through Grants Pass and the Wolf Creek area right now. And I wanted to go and kind of expand a little bit on something that Mr. Covington had said a while back about going out in your backyard and listening in the evening to see if you hear any of the Jungle Bunny and salsa music. And if you can, it's too close. Well, along the same lines, if you see tagging in your area increasing, you're probably not in a good area. Fortunately, I live in an area where we don't really have any gangs that I'm aware of. Don't have a whole lot of tagging or anything like that. And it's a pretty good area, the Pugetopolis. Another thing you can do is take your AM, FM radio, just go out there in your car in the evening and scan through the radio station, scan the band, and find out, just count the number of stations that are English and not. And if there are more non-English speaking stations than English ones, then you're probably not in a good area either. I mean, I ended up delivering and reloading in Vernon, California yesterday, and anytime I get down around the LA area, I get about as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Not good thing. And so it was one of those, yeah, there was all kinds of gang graffiti around down there, and went underneath this one train trestle there in Vernon that my GPS took me. I'm driving a 13-foot-6 truck and come up on a sign that says 13-5, and that was the truck route. I'm going, ooh, I got really nervous, so I crept underneath the train trestle and didn't hit anything, but I got a real good eyeball on all the homeless people that were residing underneath that particular trestle, and they were eyeballing me as I crept through there at a snail's pace. Hopefully not damaging my equipment, and I didn't hit anything, so that was a good thing. If you got a lot of homeless, a lot of non-English radio stations, and a lot of tagging, you probably need to move. So, that's my little short segment for this time around. So hopefully you are getting your plans together, ducks in a row, getting ready to make your move here to the homeland so we can get this ball rolling faster than what it is. We could use the help, so please quit stalling, get it in gear, and come on out here to the homeland. All right, comrades, this is the trucker signing off from Southern Oregon.
And here's some of that lovely evil karaoke for you. I'm pretty sure this is more cue. It's called Dropping Bombs on Syria.
Sun coming up over Aleppo City. The roof brigades eating someone's heart. The endless front is killing all the Christians. I'm still funding these rebels worlds apart. Someone set off some kind of gas attack. We're not sure who it is, but we're gonna fight a war for rebels, just 'cause we hate that president. Drop bombs on Syria, because Israel so nicely asked. It's humane compared to poison gas. We're gonna kill Assad, send him to a smelling guy. Drop bombs on Syria. Sun going down on any hope of peace. He drew a line, now we're entrenched. Made up of us and the French. To tell the truth, it's just a proxy. We only wanna hurt Iran. I might just make this a false dichotomy. Either with Assad or your American. Drop bombs on Syria. It's bipartisan and therefore good. Drop bombs on Syria. Going to war gives me some big old wood. We're gonna kill Assad, send him to a smelly guy. Kick some ass. We're gonna kill Assad, send him to a smelly guy. Drop bombs on Syria. Drop bombs on Syria. Do it for Netanyahu. Drop bombs. you.
Yet. This is sacred Israel. Our Jewish state is in a dangerous neighborhood under constant threat from rockets, terrorists, and those seeking its destruction. Israel relies on its bitch, America, to confront all challenges it faces and to guarantee that the United States continues to stand by Israel in total control of their Congress. That's where AIPAC comes in. AIPAC is focused exclusively on strengthening the U.S.-Israel relationship. Israel's security is too important to only control one party. We control both parties to ensure Democrats and Republicans come together to keep Israel safe. AIPAC members nationwide, which includes Americans of all ages, faiths, and races, totally bribed and blackmailed senators and representatives to ensure that we control America for Israel. We influence American policy by totally controlling it. This ensures that no matter which party is in power, there is consensus that Israel's security is more important than American interests. You can make a difference. Talk to an AIPAC staff member or visit our website to learn more about how you can help keep Israel safe, strong, and secure. To hell with the filthy goyim.
This is by a young lady who calls herself Firestarter.
Ancestral lands of Europe have shaped us into the people we are today. Always striving for something better, aiming for the stars, we go where no other people have dared to go before, and we welcome the adventure. The European people are beautiful, brilliant, kind, loving, and worth celebrating. Our way of life needs to be protected and preserved. Our history, accomplishments, culture, poetry, and literature will all cease to exist if we don't preserve our people and our way of life. We need to do everything we can to create a better world for future generations. We are told our people are evil, and it's wrong to want to live amongst our own. We are told that we need to bring in the third world to enrich us with their diversity, when we have plenty of beautiful diversity amongst our own people. If we lose our identity, our light will shine no more. We are a tiny minority of the global population, and yet we are denied lands we can call our own. If we don't think about the future and plan accordingly, our children will not have a world of their own. It is time to stand up together and protect ourselves and future generations. We need your help. Racial identity is more than just skin deep. Millennia of hardship, environment, tradition, culture, and struggle have honed us into the people that we are. Our history has shown that together we can do anything.
Thank you. Good evening, comrades. So tonight we're going to have another digression from Arthur Kemp's March of the Titans. And tonight we're going to be talking about Ghosts at a Watchman. And this is Harper Lee's second novel. Now, it's both a sequel and a prequel because it's set after To Kill a Mockingbird, but it was written prior. So this is an insight into the writer's process. Now, the story centers around Jean Louise, who is the same character as Scout from To Kill a Mockingbird. At this point, Jean is a transplanted New Yorker who has come to visit family and friends in her native Macon, Georgia. The book is set in the early 60s, when the South was in turmoil over integration, and Jean learns that both her father and also her marriage prospect, Hank, are members of a White Citizens Council chapter. And this realization upsets Jean and readers who remember Atticus as a fair-minded lawyer who took a case back in the mid-1930s that had to do with a black man who was accused of sexual assault. Jean wants to understand her family better, so she has a serious discussion with her uncle, Dr. Finch, and most of all, Atticus and Hank. Jean's marriage prospect, Hank, grew up as an orphan and was taken in by Atticus and treated like a son. And Atticus had groomed him to be a lawyer. Now, Hank is from the wrong side of the tracks, and he explains that he must keep up appearances. And it's expected that he, like most men, would be a counselor. He also claims that, like Atticus, he is protesting the courts with regard to Brown versus Board of Ed. And both he and Atticus claim to be Jeffersonian Democrats who support the Southern Manifesto, or would likely support the Southern Manifesto. However, it is not explicitly mentioned in this book. And they believe that the NAACP has no business in the South. So with regard to the Negro, both Atticus and Hank seem to be paternalistic and supremacist, and they may believe that the Negro might be civilized one day, but that it would take hundreds of generations. Hank and Atticus are advocates of free speech. They also believe that the South needs to self-police and that any Klan or citizens' counselors that go outside of peaceful and lawful conduct need to be corrected by other Southerners. Atticus also explains to Jean that Mr. Hanlon, who was the speaker that really upset Jean the most when she snuck into the citizens' council meeting because he was the speaker that spoke of mongrelization, was not a typical citizens' counselor, and that in fact he may have been a Yankee from Massachusetts. Now, I believe this character was probably based on Carlton Putnam. That would just be my educated guess based on my knowledge of Carlton Putnam. Thus, when we get past the emotion of the book, we see that no one except Mr. Hanlon's character was really a racialist in a modern sense. The rest are really just half-hearted paternalists. Jean Louise is encouraged to realize that her father is not a deity, and she has to have faith in her own conscience. It's mentioned, and Jean admits this herself, that she is really colorblind, and she wants to see blacks as individuals and not as groups. Despite the fact, which Atticus brings up, that they may very well vote in groups. So Jean wants to give the Negroes a fair chance, and she, like Atticus, doesn't believe that mixed marriages happen very often, and she thinks that it's mean and distasteful to discuss racial biology issues. She's so upset over the Citizens' Council that she considers leaving the South and never coming back. However, Dr. Finch convinces her to come home to the South because she can mature and help the South to be a better place. Now, admittedly, Jean has struggled in her personal life because her mother died when she was very young and she lacked a role model. And thus, she struggles to mature. Now, the author writes in so many flashbacks to Jean's childhood that it is easy to see why Harper Lee would rewrite the book from a young girl's perspective. Now, the adult Jean seems as conflicted as anyone because she feels independently that the court did overstep with Brown versus Board of Ed, but at the same time is livid over the citizens' councils. So I found her character to be hard to figure out. She seems to be ruled by waves of emotion. Jean's worldview really seems to be very limited. She seems to never consider a global scale or historical realities. This is despite years spent in New York, which is a port that I'm sure even at that time had many immigrants really from all over the world and would have even more so after 1965. This book, like many novels, is a relatively quick read, and it's available as an ebook for a reasonable price, and it may be found in PDF form on the internet for a small fee in many cases. Now, it's hard for me to completely tune into this book. It's hard for me especially to tune in to the character of Jean Louise, but it is an interesting insight into, if nothing else, the author's view, and I suppose the view of maybe most people on the question of clans and citizens' councils. Now, in terms of the book itself, I'm not sure whether the things that they tell Jean about the Citizens' Council and also to a lesser extent the Klan are things that they're telling her because they know she's very upset and it doesn't really represent their point of view, or whether it actually does represent their point of view. But at any rate, more importantly, as I've said, it definitely represents the author's point of view. Harper Lee really bases Atticus's character on her own father, the way that his views evolved over time regarding race, and therefore, in some sense, this book might be read really more as a prequel than a sequel in that sense. So I hope this review shed light on a book that has been very controversial and has caused quite a stir over this summer. So if nothing else, I hope that this book or this review just gave you an insight into what other people are reading and thinking about. I doubt that we would be particularly concerned with or emotional about the figure of Atticus and the career of this fictional lawyer. Harold requested that I discuss this book, and I think it's an interesting discussion to have. I finally was able to get around to it now that I think that we are coming to a point that we'll need a lot of breaks with regard to March of the Titans, which never seems to end. So I thank you very much for listening, and I hope you found this review enlightening. And hail victory, comrades, and have a good evening.
Okay, this was put up on YouTube by someone using the name of Shiksa Goddess. I don't know if she actually sings this or whether she just put it up on YouTube. It is a parody of a Taylor Swift song called Blank Space Blank Check, I believe it is. Now, here's the thing. I do not know Taylor Swift from Adam's House Cat. I mean, I have a vague idea that she's some kind of modern rock star, but since I stopped following rock and roll about the time of Quarter Flash in 1981, I have no idea what this parody would mean, but presumably some of our younger listeners will.
made you, I'm a Jew. I would like to take all of your things, pension, wages, then I'll grin. Been too far and I got caught, oh my god. Again, the white race, they always point out our mistakes. It was supposed to go our way.
Hi, I'm Steve.
I'm Irene.
I'm Lisa.
My name is Tom.
I'm a graphic designer.
College freshman.
Stay-at-home mom with a full-time job.
Scholar on social policy and a barista.
And I'm just like you.
I'm an Obama supporter.
I support President Obama.
But the president needs your help.
Our president can't launch into another war without you. And remember, when we voted for him in 2008 and 2012, we promised to support him no matter what.
Together, we can do it.
That's why we here at the Americans for Whatever Barack Obama Wants, Did You Know He's Friends with Jay-Z, have launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund World War III.
And America is dead-ass broke, so our goal is to raise $1.6 trillion on behalf of the U.S. government.
That's where you come in.
Even a small donation would make all the difference.
World War III is a very important, very progressive war that Obama tells me is very important. So it must be.
When I first saw the president speak in 2008 in a YouTube clip posted to my Facebook page, I knew he was going to be right all the time. So I support World War III. and for, and any moon war the president may want to start.
I mean, there is no way that he or the cabal of corporate interests, spy agencies, and shadow bankers that tell him what to do would ever mislead us.
The $1.6 trillion that we raise will help create a war that truly puts the liberal in neoliberal. There will be millions of troops, thousands of organic grass-fed bombs, hybrid Prius tanks, rockets controlled by iPads, and drones that play the Lumineers while they attack.
World War III is not going to be like those other Republican wars fought on just 1% of the world. This war is going to be fought in 99% of the world.
It'll be everywhere. Russia, China, Africa, Cincinnati, your favorite brunch spot, the one with those kick-ass ranchero breakfast burritos.
Everywhere.
World War III will also be the most social media-focused war ever. It'll be all over Twitter, Facebook, Vine, Pinterest, and whatever eventually replaces Pinterest. And I mean, just think of all the hilarious gifs we can make of cats reacting to their owners' homes being obliterated.
Lots of shock, but tons of aww.
And come on, guys, how good will Michelle's arms look in sleeveless army fatigues?
We have a lot of great rewards for our donors. If you donate $10 to the World War III Project, you'll get a shout out on social media.
Hashtag thank you.
A $25 donation will get you a piece of rubble from a war-torn Middle Eastern country kissed by Senator Lindsey Graham.
A $100 donation gets you a day pass to leave your local refugee camp.
You'll probably end up in a refugee camp, but it'll have free Wi-Fi.
And a $10 million donation gets you your own senator for a year.
So please, help us reach our goal of $1.6 trillion so we can make World War III a reality. Why? Because Obama.
Because Obama.
I got an email here from a longtime female party associate, Comrade Kate, who's been with us for many years from the time I was living down in Astoria. At our last meeting, a subject came up that she clearly had ideas on, and she agreed to do a submission for the program on the topic. Now, although Kate has, in fact, appeared on Radio Free Northwest before, many years ago, I'm familiar with this lady's personal situation, and for various reasons, I am not comfortable with actually putting her voice on here at this time. So I'm actually going to read this commentary myself. Dear Harold, this is something I said I'd send you before we meet next, but I had a hard time in finding the words to express what I feel, and what was supposed to be a discussion starter felt more like a bad essay. Here it is, although hopefully as a conversation starter. A woman's view of displacement of white males in the workplace. I hear white men complain that economic downturns, diversity quotas, and political correctness have made higher-wage jobs hard for them to find and keep. As a woman, I experience these problems in a different way. In my ideal world, women would choose to focus most of their energy on homemaking and take on employment outside the home only if they wish. In my reality, I work to keep my family afloat and focus energy on developing my career for long-term security. This messes with me on a visceral level, among the things I struggle with. Emasculation of white men. I believe it's natural for the man to be the king of his household with a family that looks up to, respects, and obeys him. Being obedient to a man doesn't make a woman a second-class citizen. It makes an effective partnership. It chips away at a man's sense of masculinity when a woman has to function as the head of the household. I've been the breadwinner during most of my relationship and have sometimes been the only one with an income. My man handles it really well, but I can sense the hurt. Cheating my family out of a wife and mother. Living in a safer community while pursuing higher pay in the big city means longer commutes, and that cuts into time with my family. I don't have energy left at the end of the day to be a gourmet cook or keep our home beautiful. Sometimes I feel like half a woman. Interacting with non-white men at work. Maintaining a professional image when working with the opposite sex can be a challenge, and working with foreign-born men makes it even more complicated. Different cultures have different norms. Taking the time to understand their norms and act accordingly means I focus less on the job at hand. I know other women and their families struggle with these things and more. It would be interesting to hear their stories and to also know how men deal with the advantage we women have as a protected class when it comes to employment. Signed, Kate. Okay, ladies, how about it? Let us hear from you, preferably in an MP3 audio file, about how life in Obama's America is treating you and how you're surviving.
I've been hearing a lot about white privilege lately.
About how white women have things so much easier than every other people.
That because of the color of my skin, things are simply handed to me.
I guess we have the privilege of having unwanted immigration forced into our lands, being hated and blamed for all of the world's problems.
And footing the bill for all of it.
I guess we had the privilege of being enslaved to the Barbary pirates,
Ottoman Turks,
and countless others throughout history.
And that privilege still carries over to today. I guess we also had the privilege of having our myths, legends, and folktales culturally appropriated by non-whites.
White women of childbearing age are only 2% of the world's population.
Yet we are encouraged to breed outside of our race.
Or forfeit having children altogether.
Because we'll just be adding more racist carbon consumers to the world.
White women are attacked just for walking down the street.
1 in 4 Swedish women will be raped in her lifetime. And she's not being raped by other Swedes.
White women are being raped in broad daylight.
While onlookers do nothing.
White women are currently enslaved in Israel.
And raped repeatedly.
Day and night, without any hope for escape.
We are actually told that a white woman can't be raped, because she is the oppressor, and oppressors can't be raped.
We are victims of hate crime, but the world falls silent. No one seems to care when it happens to a white person.
The world applauds as our race dies.
And our people's souls are broken.
Femen, funded by the Jew George Soros, pits white women against their own men. Taught to hate our fathers and despise our brothers through relentless bashing of the hetero white male. They advocate for Islam. A religion that cuts off the clitorises of little girls and requires their women to be covered from head to toe.
Yet they are marching around bare-breasted? What is going on?
The media programs women into thinking the Sex and the City lifestyle is ideal.
And traditional gender roles are oppressive and backwards.
We are taught by Jewish feminists that motherhood is oppressive and that we need to leave the house to go work in a cubicle, a strip club, or wait tables for mindless consumers and serve anyone but our own family.
This is freedom from oppression?
Wake up. A war is being waged against you. It is time to finally take action.
We will not accept the anti-white lies and propaganda put forth by the media.
We will not stand by and watch as our people are shamed and demoralized and as our countries are ruined.
We will not be collectively punished for the supposed sins of our ancestors. Learn about the real history of our people. Not the vicious lies inserted into our books, TV shows, magazines, and movies.
Question the mainstream narrative. Research white genocide.
Demand justice for our folk.
Have the uncomfortable conversation with your family about racial realities. We're running out of time.
We need you.
Speaking of women in our culture, this next number comes from the soundtrack of the movie Songcatcher. I can't remember offhand who does it, but these are authentic Appalachian Mountain folk singers here, just normal people who were taught how to play the fiddle or the banjo or whatever by their elders. And if this recording sounds a little rough, that's because it is actually recorded out on the front porch of a cabin up in the Smoky Mountains.
I saw many fair lovers
I guess we'll close with an email from my old buddy Lewis Hall back in North Carolina. Dear Harold, I just read in an article in the LA Times where a guy named Joe Trippi explains in great detail how Hillary Clinton is neither down nor out, and she is almost certainly going to be the Democratic nominee and most likely, barring a miracle, the next president. I don't know if this guy knows what the hell he's talking about or not. But if he does, how will it feel on the day after the election day of 2016 to know that you have been vindicated and possibly the greatest prophecy in your Northwest novels has come true, signed Lou. No, Lewis, if the Hildebeest is elected president in 13 months' time, I will not feel vindicated. I will feel terrified. This woman, at the time of her election, will be 69 years old. Since automatic second-term re-election appears now to be an intrinsic part of whatever weird electoral pact the Democrats and the Republicans have worked out, she will serve as president for 8 years, being kept alive by the best and latest medical technology, which can keep her aging and decaying carcass alive, but not do too much for her mind or personality. Hillary's been waiting for this her whole life, since she was 7 or 8 years old by some accounts. And she's had 60-plus years to build up a lifetime of hatred and resentment against anyone who ever dared to get in her way, and that's a long list, starting with Barack and Michelle Obama and the George Soros faction within the ruling party, who denied her the prize in 2008. After that comes anybody who's white, male, and heterosexual, starting with that ridge-running bush-shaped husband of hers, since there are still some pretty powerful white men in Washington in the upper echelons of American society, the economy and the media and so forth. I think you can see the impending problem there if the president has a psychological difficulty with them. Hillary Clinton's precise mental and emotional state has been the subject of a number of intensive research articles recently, and what's between her ears is not in the best of shape. The journalists and writers seem almost frightened by what they've found. She's not exactly cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs yet, but she's showing signs of irritability, forgetfulness, impatience with contradiction, and paranoia, all of which come with age. I can relate. I'm starting to show a lot of the same symptoms. And Hillary and I have something else in common. People really are out to get us. But I'm not going to be occupying the Oval Office with my finger on the nuclear trigger. She will be. There seems little doubt that the Sea Hag is, at the very least, getting a little frayed around the edges. I don't want to be around when she finally acquires power after a lifetime of happy horse shit to get it, and all of a sudden she can take her revenge on all those who offended her, including me, if the report I got 15 years ago that Slow Coming Dark has been brought to her attention is correct. All that aside, we need to understand something clearly demonstrated by this woman's time in the United States Senate and as Secretary of State. Hillary Clinton is a bumbling incompetent. She was terrible at both jobs, and she has a resume of quite literally zero accomplishments in both. Notably, that ghastly fuck-up in Benghazi that got 4 Americans killed, including, of all things, a homosexual ambassador to a fundamentalist Muslim country, who was reported at the time to have been dragged out of the consulate and buggered on the burning sands before his head and other assorted body parts were lopped off. I can understand why Hillary does not want the emails relating to that incident to become public knowledge. And just whose bright idea was that, to send a fruit fly as ambassador to a society where sodomy is punishable by death? Can you imagine what kind of colossal dog's dinner she will make of the country if she gets into 1600 Pennsylvania? We will spend 8 years being ruled by a crazy woman with a grudge against the entire country who spurned her and forced her to rely on a marriage which denied her very sexual nature in order to get what she feels she deserves, which is everything. That will not be a pleasant situation for any of us to be in. It is my considered opinion that what remains of this country literally will not survive 8 years of Hillary Clinton. And I say that knowing that it's been said by assorted hysterical alarmists and conspiracy theorists since 1976, when I first heard it about Jimmy Carter, of all people. But back in 1976, there was still an immense amount of tread left on the American tire. Now that tire is flat, slick, and bald, and the steel radial belts are showing and rusting and about to snap asunder. If Hillary Clinton takes over next year, the empire is finished, and since I could in theory be in my late 60s, when she dies in office of some loathsome disease, or when the desperate military finally revolts and drags her out of the Oval Office and flings her screaming and cursing carcass onto a bonfire in Lafayette Park, I don't want to be around if she does get elected, although I'm not going to have any choice. So, no, Lewis, I am hoping and praying that next November my vaunted gift of prophecy turns out to be wrong. But for now, our time is up for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sarsha Anuban. Freedom.